If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
It's Slate Night, the Film Fan Podcast. Now, here are your hosts, Corey and Mason.
Welcome to Slate Night, the Film Fan Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Mason Schmidt, here with my best bud, Corey Knutson.
Ew!
We're just going to skip the formality of me reading this long paragraph. We talk about movies. We talk about new releases, the movies we've seen from the past week, any sort of things that we're catching up on in terms of movie news, and any sort of development in terms of physical media. We look at that. We talk about it. We're trying to just spruce this up and get it a little bit faster moving, because we got a lot of shit to talk about this week. And it wasn't even like a big release week, but we got a lot of stuff to cover. So, Corey, how have you been, and what are we drinking today?
Doing pretty good. Took a little trip up to the cabin. Saw my grandma up there, and we were just, you know, having a good time, playing some cards, hanging out.
You showed the podcast?
Did not. I didn't.
Just you calling me a predator?
Yeah. I was like, I don't know how that'll go over. But she wanted to watch something at night, and we were just like flicking through the Roku channel or whatever.
Yes.
And I was clicking through, and she's like, stop on that. And it was The Great Canadian Baking Show. And I was like, okay.
I didn't know there was a Canadian one. I know there's like obviously the British, and I love that show.
Yeah, but. We stopped on it, and it's just all these people in a tent making food.
Yeah.
And you know what? I can't even lie. I kind of got into it a little bit.
The Great British Baking Show was amazing.
I was sitting there, and I was just like, I don't really care about this. And I'm like, oh, that's a pretty good like crust on that. Yeah. Like, that looks good. And then
flaky.
The judges are like, oh, yeah, this is a little dry. I'm like, yeah, no, it does look dry. I'm like, for sure.
Yeah, you fucking flamed it.
This happens with every like reality show, like The Bachelor, any of those. I'm like, this is dumb. And I'm like, you're not going to send her home, are you?
I want you to watch Secret Lives of Mormon Wives.
I do want to, yeah. That's
your IQ will be tanked, but it's so good.
That's going to be maybe next time we get drunk and watch something. Yeah. Maybe we'll toss that
in between our delay in Love on the Spectrum, while we wait for a new season of that, I'll show you Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, because it's truly remarkable, the stupid shit that comes out of these people's minds.
I can't wait to see it. Yeah. But yeah, this week maybe this is going to be similar to Twisted Tea Week. We got some Sun Cruisers. Mm-hmm. It's vodka lemonade. There's strawberry, pink lemonade, regular, and then like a half and half with some iced tea in there. So I've already sucked one of these bad boys down. My first time trying them, I love these. I've seen ads for them everywhere, so I wanted to try them out. But I really, really like them. You've had them before, right?
Yeah, it's a good, like, just on a boat day, up at a cabin. It's an easy thing to drink. Sometimes I don't want a lot of carbonation, especially if I'm, like, running around or if I'm, like, drinking beer and then, like, oh, we're going to do water sports. I'm like, great, I suck at that. Now I have all this carbonation that's just going to make me fucking yelp while I'm out there trying to get on this paddle while you guys are fucking yawn on the boat. I'm like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
So I like these. They're not out of Minnesota. They're out of California, which is kind of not a surprise at all, but they're good, great, and I think that they could be potentially dangerous because the Twee episode was the drunkest I think I've been while recording, so.
Yeah. Cool cans, though. I like the cool like little design on there, but anyways, this week, we did have Nobody 2 come out this week. Neither of us saw it. I intended to see it. I set my alarm, got up at 10 a.m. and was like, I'm kind of tired right now. I'm going to go back to bed. And then I didn't see it. So, my bad on that. You know, I'll see it next week.
It.
But I did rewatch Nobody, which I hadn't seen since 2021 in theaters. I think last week I mentioned I saw that and Godzilla vs. Kong near each other. Mm-hmm. And it was like theaters reopening. So I had good memories of it. And it still holds up for me. I really enjoy that movie a lot. I think that Bob Odenkirk, I mean, like at the time, he was really just Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul guy. Yeah. And wasn't an action star, but then he's like, I want to do all my own stunts, and it shows in the movie. I think it actually looks really good. The car chase scene is really fun, and then the end action scene when he's in the warehouse with Christopher Lloyd just fucking bop, bop with the shotgun. Rizzo's up there sniping
RZA just
people.
Shows up.
It's like, you know what? This is great. It's not like groundbreaking. It really is John Wick.
Older.
Just with, you know, Bob Odenkirk. Yeah. It's the same kind of like retired guy, and then there's like sort of a maybe society or like some assassin group, whatever. The villain's pretty weak in the movie. I don't really even remember much about him. His name's Julian, so sure.
Great.
But I really enjoyed rewatching it. I have a fun time, and I am actually excited to see the sequel. Mm-hmm. I think going in knowing that it's probably not going to be as good, but like if it gives me a fun action, you know, hour and a half, fine with that. So I'll probably have a review of that next week. Life just got busy, and I just was sleeping, so I didn't see it.
Yeah, it was a busy week for me. Sadly, I didn't see a single movie in theaters, which is probably one of the few times this year where I missed an entire week of movie watching at the theater. So it's kind of a down week for me. But I love the original Nobody. I think Bob Odenkirk is so great in this role, but also just in general, I love him in Better Call Saul. I didn't watch that show to its completion or to its like finale. Was it like a 5 or 6 season show?
It was 6, yeah.
I watched the first 2, and I really liked it. I'm bad at sticking with shows. but I remember when he was briefly introduced in the U.S. office, and then they went through like in the later seasons of Steve Carell leaving, and we don't have that Michael Scott character. I'm like, why the fuck are we not bringing Bob Odenkirk into that role and just having him somehow right away for him to come over to the Scranton branch of Dunder Mifflin? I love Bob Odenkirk, and he's so fun in this movie. I haven't watched it, I think, since theaters in 2021, but I do remember really enjoying it. And it is kind of like it's like John Wick-esque, but you have like a doting husband and his family, and he's just trying to get like his daughter's like bracelet or watch back.
Well, it's kind of weird because like I'd forgotten the specific plot of like what got him back into the life.
What he's going for.
And like it starts out and there's the break-in at his home, and then he's tracking the guys who took the money and his kitty cat bracelet.
Kitty cat, yeah.
Or his daughter's bracelet. And then he finds them, but they're just like two people that are like, they have a kid and they're not really like thieves or criminals, really. They're just trying to provide for their family. Mm-hmm. And then they don't have the bracelet, so then he's just, like, on the bus ride back, and then that's when, like, the Russian kid's
the story starts, yeah.
And I'm like, wow, the whole, like, break-in and getting the bracelet really didn't mean anything.
Yeah. It was just getting him on this bus at this time for these guys to get on and for him to have a bad day and beat him up.
Yeah, I was like, so it's kind of weird. But, yeah, I mean, to echo your thoughts about Better Call Saul, I did watch the whole show. I love it. Mm-hmm. I think it's almost as good as Breaking Bad. Like, I think it's amazing, and I hope someday you watch it. I think that's one of the things you haven't seen that I have that I think you really would like.
I feel like I faintly remember asking you kind of where it compares to Breaking Bad, and I might be putting words in your mouth, but I think I remember you saying that you liked it more than Breaking Bad at one point, so I was like, oh shit, like that's high praise, because I know how much you and I both love Breaking Bad. So I know it's a show that like is kind of a hole in my like back category or back like watching film fandom and television fandom, so it's something I need to like quickly go back and revisit. There's a lot of shows I need to get to, and let's be real, Game of Thrones, maybe if I ever get to it. But aside from Nobody 2, which we didn't see, Nobody's great. I'm excited to somewhat, I'll probably end up seeing Nobody 2 on another slow week. It is August, so I know we have a couple more weeks here where it's a little bit slower, but we have a lot of releases, so who knows? Maybe I'll check this one out still in theaters. Highest to Lowest was somewhat the big release, I would say, or at least the one I was more excited about just because it's coming from director Spike Lee. That was the new one in theaters this week. It was a limited release going to Apple TV Plus. A24 is handling the distribution. It's a whole weird kind of conglomerate thing. I don't know. Didn't see that either. Corey did. We'll talk about that in a minute. But we both thought it'd be good to kind of go back to the movie that this film is somewhat adapting. The same story that it's adapting, which is the 1963 Akira Kurosawa masterpiece, which is High and Low. Akira Kurosawa, obviously known for like Seven Samurai, Rashomon, more than just like the samurai flick, the samurai pictures, as I said earlier before we started recording. High and Low stars Toshiro Mifune, who's an executive of this shoe company that really cares about what he does and wants to be successful, but also put out a good product. And the film does a great job of kind of showing us that in the first 10 to 15 minutes of a man that is kind of harsh, but he has a lot of principles and he stands on his principles. But he becomes a victim of an extortion act when his chauffeur's son is kidnapped by mistake and held for ransom. The kidnappers were trying to kidnap Toshiro Mifune's son and ended up taking his chauffeurs, and now he's in this dilemma of he's the only one that could potentially solve this issue, as he is the ransom money that these kidnappers are looking for, but also it's not his son and he needs this money to be allocated elsewhere so he can kind of take more control of the company he works within. So it's a good dilemma. Corey, have you seen this movie before this week?
I had not. This was my first time watching it, and I was really excited because anytime kind of checking off a classic, I'm excited for it. And I echo everything you just said. This is an awesome movie. It is, I think, like 2 hours and 20 minutes, which is like a bit on the long side, but I never felt the length there. I think it really is a tale of two halves. Of that first half, being the kidnapping happens, and then the detectives come in, and they're trying to figure out, should we pay the ransom, should we not? Mm-hmm. And that's the whole point of whether they do it or not. And then the back half is really the whole investigation. And the Toshiro Mifune really isn't in that much in the second half, which has kind of surprised me a bit. And it's just the police investigating. And from the get-go, I think it's just a great idea to not have... Like, you could have just done the main character's son gets kidnapped and do this story and play it out that way. But to have it, like, the fake-out and then have it be his chauffeur's son, or in Highest to Lowest case, like, a friend's son.
Yeah.
That's just an interesting idea that almost is, like, ahead of its time, kind of. Even, like, for 1963, I feel like doing that is, like, oh, that's a cool twist to do. And not just be like, oh, should I pay? Because it's like, well, yeah, you would pay for your son. Yeah. So, like, it kind of is, you get what they're going to do. But with this, he's like... Man, like, he's my friend, and he's like, but I also, it's like, my whole company, my livelihood, everything, and the chauffeur, he's like, I know that you can pay this, and, like, you can get my son back, it's just a matter of if you're gonna do it, so that was just a really interesting, like, ethical dilemma in that first half.
Yeah, that, and I think that they explore it so well, because he doesn't have his kid or the chauffeur's kid in sight. And he gets the call saying, I got your son. So he's immediately like, oh my god, my son has been kidnapped. Yeah, I'll pay any ransom, whatever you need, whatever money. Yeah, we'll write it off. It doesn't matter. It's my son. And then his son walks in the room and he's like, oh, it was just a prank call. Like, thank god. And I get to see my son again. Okay, everything's fine. And then, oh, the chauffeur's son doesn't come back. And it's like, it's so cool to see the juxtaposition of when it was his kid. He was so willing to fork over that money. And then he like... gets out of it. It's not his son. And he's an affluent man, but this money, like, he needs a very specific amount to achieve the things that he's looking to do. And if he pays this ransom, he won't be able to achieve those things. And now he's like, okay, well, my son's safe. This chauffeur has been loyal to me for so long, and it's his son, and he doesn't have the means to handle this or pay the ransom. But should that necessarily mean that it's my cross to bear? Should I be responsible for that? And I thought that was so well executed. Mm-hmm. And... like you saying, it was a tale of two halves. Not that one half is better than the other. It's just that first half takes place predominantly in their house. And it's them figuring it out, getting the calls, the detectives kind of feeling out the scene, figuring out what's going on, listening in and wiretapping the phone calls that come through of the kidnapper. And I'm like, it's so riveting. And I haven't seen or hadn't seen this movie in its entirety up until literally today when I watched it at work in substitution of doing my actual work at my office. I pulled up HBO Max on my computer, and I was like, all right, gonna not respond to emails and just watch a subtitled Japanese movie. And it's 2 hours and 20 minutes, and it does not drag. It's a great, great movie. It's very well paced. But the blocking, like, I haven't seen this movie in its entirety, but I remember watching probably 45 odd minutes of this film in a film class in college. Specifically on my professor being like, this is a masterclass in staging, blocking, and editing. Every scene, the way it shifts, the way the characters kind of reposition themselves, it's believable. And every time a new reconfiguration of the characters within a scene kind of settles, it's like, boom, snapshot. That is a frameable photo. That looks fantastic. And it's all believable, and it works with the film. And it's a black and white film, obviously. It's from 1963, and it is so photogenic. This movie is beautiful to look at. For, like I said, the first half is predominantly in this apartment, their home, and they're discussing this. How do you make that visually appealing when we're really just in their living room for the majority of the first half of this movie? It was never boring. It's always interesting. Not only in what's happening and the dilemma that's being faced, but also the way it looks. So I was immediately won over by this movie in the first 15 minutes. And yeah, it's 2 hours and 20. And sucks that you have to read subtitles for 2 hours and 20 minutes. I'm sorry, but this movie is never dull. It just... It transforms into a different movie where Toshiro Mifune was our lead in that first half of the movie. He's not really in a lot of that back half until the resolution of the story. Mm-hmm. And it works. It passes its baton from lead character to lead character. Toshiro Mifune to the actor that plays the main detective. I don't remember his name, but phenomenal. Phenomenal work on all the performances. Everything within this film just works so well.
Yeah, the blocking and framing was something that stood out immediately to me. And I think it's because it's something we don't see a lot of care in as often anymore. Whereas I feel like in the, like, 60s and 70s, even, like, Kubrick and Spielberg, like, they were so great at framing scenes and blocking. of just letting the actors move within an environment and just having them interacting with, whether it's like a couch or the set or whatever is there. And it's just not cutting, just letting them act and it's, not having to chop it up in the editing room.
Yeah, it's very rare when you get a standard shot, reverse shot in this film. Like, it's characters talking the entirety of this movie, but it's all, the camera just flows through the scene and the characters just naturally progress throughout the stage or the set. And it just works so well to where it's like, I'm not watching a cookie cutter movie, which I haven't seen Highest to Lowest. I don't know how, if any of Akira Kurosawa's work or his style really bleeds over into Highest to Lowest. Maybe that's the appeal of seeing Spike Lee's adaptation of this story. But in this movie, it just works so well. And the movie's subtle and it's willing to just present you with facts brazenly and just right in your face. And you just take it and you're like, wait, is that... that's the guy that kidnapped him? Oh, we're just seeing his house right now and him in his house? Mm-hmm. But then we leave that character and we don't really get much explanation. It's just like, did we just get shown the guilty party in this? Do we know the answer to this mystery? The film doesn't hold its cards close to its chest. It will just let you understand things. But it's by doing that, it's not losing any interest or pushing you away. If anything, it's just now you get to watch it unfold. And it works so well.
And it's so much fun seeing the investigation in that second half. And it is just kind of, it almost feels like a ragtag team of investigators and like police guys. They're like, maybe not higher ups, but they're just like, eh, we have a little part to play of like tracking information about the car. One is like the phone booth the guy was in. And it's just like they take a lot of time to get the little clues and be like, okay, we know this, so now we can go to this place, talk to this person. And then it kind of just takes some time. We have another, like, briefing, and then they give their facts, and they're like, oh, wait. And there's also, like, a great couple times in those briefings where some group will say what they found, and everybody sits up.
Yeah.
And, like, leans in because they're like, oh, that matters.
There's, like, 12 angry men.
Yeah, so there's just great, great moments like that. And there's also one really great use of color in this movie. You mentioned it's black and white, but when that color pops, you're like, ooh,
there it is!
This is great! And it's almost like a Schindler's List type moment where it's just that one color pop and you're like, ooh, that's important, that matters.
Yeah, so, and it's not just out of nowhere. It delivers on something that was set up initially like within the first 20 minutes and it happens and you're like, there it is.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yep.
Oh, it's just, it's such a visually arresting movie to watch. It's so fun. And like, it's not too dour. It's about somewhat serious matters of a child being kidnapped and heroin and kind of the class structure of Japan at the time. And also just really, like, watching this movie, it made me think back to, like, Parasite. Mm-hmm. Like, the high and low. It talks about, like, those who don't need to worry about money and where they live, the fortunate people, and then the people that are on hard times, they're struggling, they're living in like the lower parts of the land, and they always look up and they can always see this house that this amazing man who is affluent gets to live in, and it almost is like mocking them and how they see it. And you get that also with the villain in this movie as you get towards the end, and there you do get a great face-to-face between the Toshiro Mifune and the villain in this towards the very end, and you get some good line exchanges. And also this movie, while it is more of just like a drama thriller, I'd say, a movie made in 1963 had probably two or three shots that truly unsettled me more so than a lot of horror movies nowadays have. And I was so just giddy watching this at my desk as my office mate is like, what the fuck are you doing right now? There are just some jarring things of just seeing somewhat horrible acts played out in a mundane way of like, oh, we're going to show you your child just so you know that we have them and that they're alive. But the way it's presented, it's so matter of fact that it's just like, oh, like I feel gross about it. Mm-hmm. That and the way it examines kind of like heroin usage, I was also very thrown off by, but very enthralled by. And it was scary and unsettling, and how that kind of ties into the whole mystery of it and the layers of separating the perpetrator of the crime from the victim of the crime is really interesting. I can't say enough good things about this movie. It's Akira Kurosawa, so I knew I was going to watch something that was like well worth my time. This is easily like ascending the ladder of probably my favorite Akira Kurosawa films. Rashomon is my favorite. That hasn't changed, probably will never change. But as I watch more of his filmography, I'm like, God, this dude hits on everything. And this High and Low is phenomenal. Another fun fact, High and Low is only the English translation. In other countries, it translates to Heaven and Hell. And I'm like, that's such a baller title. Like, holy shit. But high and low in the States here. It's a great movie. If you can find it anywhere, watch it. I have been looking at that Criterion Collection, the Blu-ray, for the longest time, and I've been burned on too many times where I bought the movie without seeing it, watched the movie. I'm like, oh, like, okay, it's fine. This is a movie where I watched it instead of buying it first, and now I'm like, I need to own this movie. This movie is awesome.
Yeah, that end conversation that you mentioned between the two is the closing scene is so good. It's a great just, like, understanding of why the villain did what he did. You also see just the reasoning for Toshirô Mifune's character, too, and why he did what he did. It's really just that class struggle that you kind of mentioned, too, is really great. The last thing I wanted to mention of High and Low is the train sequence, like, right in the middle of the movie, as they're kind of exchanging the ransom money and, like, they have the kid. And it's just such a well-thought-out sequence and directed, and just the phone call, everything that goes on there is so great. I was not super excited for Highest to Lowest, but I was curious about it.
Yeah, Spike Lee.
Spike Lee, even before I'd seen High and Low, I was like, okay, this looks interesting, and then saw High and Low, and I'm like, okay, I could see a modern retelling of this. Like, this feels like it can make sense. You have Denzel Washington, Jeffrey Wright in there, who I love. And I was very disappointed with this movie. I did not like it. I've heard some, like, overall positive reactions to it, which I was sort of surprised by. And I really have enjoyed Spike Lee's last couple movies, Da 5 Bloods and Black Klansman. Kind of felt like he was rebounding a little bit after, like, the 2000s, where he was every
that
once in a while.
Old boy.
Yeah, and even, like, Inside Man, it doesn't feel like a Spike Lee movie all that much. It's a good movie, but I just, like, it doesn't feel like a do the right thing or anything. So Highest to Lowest is essentially the same story. Denzel is a music mogul instead of this kind of shoe factory higher up.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing happens, you know, thinks his son's taken. It's Jeffrey Wright's character, his kind of right-hand man. And this movie, to me, felt like a really bad soap opera. I was telling you about the scene where he finds out that his son is missing, or thinks that he's missing.
Yeah.
And it's so weirdly edited, and it's so just, like, nonchalant of Denzel just being like, yeah, they've got him. Yeah, I don't know. He said he hires our kid. And I was like, okay, like, there was no, like, build up to this at all. I don't feel any of it. And I think that's the difference, is just, like, you feel so much in High and Low, and, like, you're invested in everybody. Yeah. This movie, I didn't care about any of the characters. There's so many goofy scenes of dialogue that just the writing, I think, was awful in this movie. Like, I just don't think it was good at all. There are so many weird editing choices of people giving hugs and high fives and, like, dapping people up in the movie I was telling you about, where, like, they'll show it at one angle of, like, two people hugging, and then they'll cut to a different angle and then re-show that same thing every single time. And I'm like, I know that this is a choice that Spike Lee made. It's not like it's a mistake or something.
No.
But why? This is extending this movie that's 2 hours and 15 minutes and felt like it was so much longer than High and Low. There were so many parts of this movie where I was just like, what are we doing? Yeah. What's going on here? There's no tension built up. The, like, train sequence in this movie, it has, like, a key moment for that main character in High and Low that works so well of, like, should I do this, should I not? But in this movie, it's treated as, like, a mistake or, like, a oops, oh, shit, I didn't mean that to happen.
Yeah, from the way you described it, in High and Low, he has to make the decision.
Yeah.
In this movie, the decision just happens.
Yep. It's wild. Just every choice that they make. And then A$AP Rocky, spoiler alert for Highest to Lowest, I don't give a fuck. He's the guy that kidnaps him, and he's, like, trying to be this rapper and wanted to be on the music label, and Denzel never really gave him the time of day. And so he's kind of going after him, whatever. It's like, it just, A$AP in this movie, I just didn't think was very good. He was just very over the top and, like, just an incredibly, like, stereotypical version of this, like, rapper that's trying to make it in the industry that didn't work for me. Just nearly everything in this movie was not good. Denzel is never going to put in a bad performance. He really is one of the best actors of all time. And sometimes I forget that when I'm, like, thinking of my favorite actors. But I'm like, he's always committed. He's great. It's just bad writing. I think bad directing in a lot of parts. The editing is awful. There's no tension. I think it's just a poor script overall. I did not enjoy this movie. Just watch High and Low. That movie's great.
Which is a big ask. It's a movie from the 60s, and it's black and white and in a different language. So if you're anyone near our age, or older or younger, you're probably like, I don't want to watch that movie. I don't want to sit there and have to read a movie. Which the Bong Joon-ho quote at the Oscars when he was like, if you can just get past the one-inch border at the bottom of the screen where the words are, you introduce yourself to a whole world of cinema. Very true. It's pretentious as fuck, but it's very true. You expose yourself to movies that are better than the movies that you've seen already. So... I haven't seen Highest to Lowest. I am still like, still, even though you didn't like it, I'm honestly, you not liking it makes me even more excited to go see it, just because maybe it's a movie that you and I disagree on, which doesn't happen often, but I feel like this year we've had more where we're kind of going different ways on some films that I love. Life of Chuck, you liked it. It was fine for you. So I'm like, what if this is a movie I love and you hate? What if this is a movie that you and I both are like, what the fuck did everyone else get wrong about? Because a lot of the kind of surrounding buzz of this movie has been relatively positive. I think it has a good Rotten Tomatoes score. Some reviewers that you and I both like have reviewed it, and them reviewing it means it's probably a positive review. Chris Stuckman, maybe just review a negative reviewed movie for once, please. Yeah. It's film criticism.
Do a Hilariosity.
For a reason. Please do a Hilariosity.
It's great.
Do a Morbius Hilariosity of Madame Web. Oh, that'd be awesome. But I'm still like optimistic about seeing Highest to Lowest. I think it will be the first time I've seen a Spike Lee film in theaters. I don't remember if I saw Black Klansman in theaters or not. So this could be the first one for me. I do have that kind of same feeling towards Spike Lee with his more recent track record where it's, yeah, he's kind of been hitting with Black Klansman, Defy Bloods. Do the Right Thing is one of my favorite movies of all time. So I'm like, I know you have the ability to make excellent movies. So I'm going in watching this, hoping that it's going to be good. I also love Inside Man. I watched that movie probably like 40 times between the age of like 5 and 10 because my brother loves that movie. But I'm surprised that you didn't like it. It has a good cast. I don't know. I'm so intrigued by it that I'm still going to try and catch it in theaters in its limited theatrical run, but... yeah, it's kind of a bummer. Spike Lee, keep making movies. If you don't make a good movie, we'll be surprised by it. If you make a great movie, we'll be like, fuck yeah, he's back.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what you think about it when you do end up watching it.
Yeah, maybe this week. Like I said, last week was kind of a down week. I was really busy. I didn't go to the theaters once. I'm hoping to kind of make up for that this week. And even if it's a movie I'm not that excited about, I just want to go see a movie. Something that didn't come out theatrically, something that was definitely on my back burner in terms of excitement for the rest of the summer, just because it is a television series, was Alien Earth, which the Alien franchise has somewhat been rejuvenated with Alien Romulus. For me, and I think for you as well, it never really went away with like Prometheus and Alien Covenant. We both like those films a lot. But now we got Alien Romulus, we're catching some ahead of steam, and now we have Alien Earth coming from Noah Hawley, who I believe made the FX show Legion. And he is the creator of this show as well as the director of the first episode. I forget who directed the second. Episodes Neverland and Mr. October did premiere this past Tuesday, and we're filming this a little late, so tomorrow we'll get a new episode. We'll get episode 3. This series is starring Sydney Chandler, Alex Lawther, Essie Davis, who I saw her in this and I was like, wait a minute, is that Babadook mom? Is that the mom from Babadook? Like, I love seeing her. So in this, it's great. Samuel Blenken and also Timothy Oliphant, who I feel like has been a big part of their marketing push. He's like one of the more established, recognizable names. It's something that I didn't necessarily think I needed within the world of Alien, is seeing how Earth has been afflicted or how Earth looks in this time period. But it obviously focuses around Earth, and the series starts off when a mysterious space vessel crash lands on Earth. A young woman and a ragtag group of tactical soldiers makes a fateful discovery that puts them face to face with the planet's greatest threats. I'm not going to give a whole lot of in-depth things, and I know you haven't watched this, so I want to get your words on it once you do, but this is a show I didn't think I needed, but I do very much appreciate, and I'm so eagerly anticipating tomorrow and to watch the third episode of this. It covers a lot of stuff that I've been waiting within the Alien world. When we got Alien Romulus, it was like proving to, I feel like, the greater population that like, oh no, we know how to handle Alien. We know what made the first two Alien films great. We can do that again or replicate that somewhat again. Now this series is doing something where I'm like, all right, now we're dipping into more of the heady sci-fi of it. And we're branching out from the xenomorphs and the facehuggers, finally. There's other alien life forms that are threatening and freaky. And I like those little additions thus far in this show. Also, by reading that synopsis where it's a ragtag group of tactical soldiers, it's like, oh, kind of give me Aliens vibes. Watch this show, it's not Aliens. It's not at all. It's so different, and I think that they do a good job of kind of setting up something within this world that is believable, and how like all these big technology companies and corporations are taking over Earth. You got like Weyland-Yutani, you got, I forget what the name of this new company is, but talking about artificial intelligence, cyborgs, synthezoids, like people that have like transformed intelligence and different types of kind of robotic enhancements and stuff like that, and how they use that to do something fresh and new within this franchise, but also with our main set of characters, that is interesting. And also, I'm like, I have no idea what these interactions between these characters, how it's going to play out. I have no idea what's going on. And the first two episode arc of what we've been presented with is just a woman looking for her brother in a crash site. And it works so well. We do get some good xenomorph action, but we also get little highlights of different life forms, different alien forms that are also a threat. And I'm already so won into where this is going. It speaks to a lot of the things and has themes that are similar to a lot of the stuff we've seen within the Alien franchise. But it's giving us something, like I said, more heady sci-fi, more out there stuff. It's rolling with it. It's building upon the xenomorphs and the facehuggers in a way that I didn't think was 100% necessary, but I'm so excited by. And also, I didn't need to focus on Earth. But it's also refreshing to just see not necessarily the home planet within this Alien franchise, but a planet. And what, like, kind of day-to-day living looks like. It's a little bit more lived in. It's kind of like Andor for the Star Wars universe, where you get to see kind of the day-to-day, the more grounded approach to things. This, I'm like, all right, yeah, okay. I now understand, outside of Alien and Aliens, what the kind of surrounding planets and world, what life on those is like a little bit. So I'm excited for the rest of the show. I'm eagerly anticipating episode 3. I'm also really excited for you to catch up once you do.
Yeah, I think either this week or next week when it gets about halfway through, I'll catch up there and then I'll have a review of some other stuff on Hulu too that I'm excited to watch. But yeah, I think it's really just an interesting placement within the timeline too, after Prometheus and Alien Covenant, before the first Alien movie. That's a cool era to explore because there's not much that we've seen in there or like know about that time. Mm-hmm. Not that, like, I obviously haven't seen it, but like, not that this will directly tie in, but
I'm hoping it does.
Yeah, and I hope it just kind of does its own thing, but within that time, maybe a few hints here and there. Yeah. Like, that's fine, but I'm excited. I know Noah Hawley also worked on Fargo, which a lot of people like.
Yeah, that was another one.
But I know Legion, another show I haven't seen, but I've heard that kind of gets a little headier with like superhero stuff, which I've always wanted to check that out. But yeah, I'm excited to watch this show. I think it's, you know, seeing more alien stuff, I'm always like, I don't know if I need it. But then once it kind of gets closer, like with Romulus too, I was like, I'm excited. Like, I'm ready for some more alien stuff.
I'm a big fan of this already. I don't know how many episodes there are to this full season of.
I think it's eight this first season.
Yeah. I know Noah Hawley has mentioned that he has like a full arc, like seasons of an arc for these characters. So I'm like, all right, I'm excited. He has
love
a plan.
Hearing that.
Love to hear that there's a plan.
Yeah,
awesome. Star Wars sequel trilogy. I love most of you. Actually, I love all three of those movies, but like, you can tell there's not really the best plan. But this series, it feels like we're building the stuff already within these first two episodes. I didn't mention this yet, but there is such a great adherence to what, like, the feel of those first two movies. Not necessarily the horror, but just the look of things. It has that same style, the same aesthetic of the first two films, which I am so giddy about, and I can't wait to kind of see how that bleeds over. I hope that they don't really try to force a connection or lead into. I don't need a Rogue One to the first Alien movie. I don't need that kind of bridge in this franchise. The show is working great as it is. I'm super excited by it, and I can't wait for it to get more brutal. Because this, as a TV show, this looks like it could have been on the big screen. This looks like a film. It looks awesome. So I'm a big fan of it. It's a TV show that I'm actually surprisingly going to watch week to week this year, which isn't something that happens often. So I feel like that is high praise enough from me. Moving into the bulk of my movie watching this week, again, I've mentioned that I'm kind of already starting to watch like a lot of horror movies and like spooky season movies because I love October and fall and Halloween and all that shit. A somewhat more prolific horror director as of recently is Oz Perkins or whatever the fuck you want to call him. I just, on every other poster or website, it's Oz Perkins. I'm like, just pick one, dude. It's fine. But obviously he has a kind of a bit of a horror filmography that he's shaping up. shaping up. He had Gretel and Hansel in 2020, obviously Long Legs last year, and then The Monkey this year. And then he has, what, The Keeper coming out? Is that 2026?
I think it's next year, yeah.
Next year, like early next year, which the trailers have came out, and I'm intrigued by that. But I hadn't seen Gretel and Hansel, so this was kind of my excuse to go back. I'm going to watch some Oscar Perkins movies. I want to watch Gretel and Hansel, directed by, obviously, the man himself. This film, it's a modern, not modern, it's a new adaptation of the classic Hansel and Gretel story. And this was a movie that when it came out, I heard negatives in the fact that it was like, it's kind of a slow burn. It's not really scary. There's not a lot going on, but it's visually just a feast. Like, it looks awesome. And it does. It's shot well. There are some unsettling moments that really I was like kind of surprised by. And anything witchy or like, anytime there's like sticks in a triangle that are just like twined together and that's witchcraft, I'm like, that's so fucking awesome. Like any like that folky weird shit kind of gets me going. So I'm like, all right.
Little weapons.
Yeah, little stuff. Weapons yep. type stuff, which kind of helped lead me into this rewatch of these Osgood Perkins movies. Gretel and Hansel, it's not a great horror film, but I kind of get what it was going for. And for being like, I don't have the best kind of relationship or experience with like Osgood Perkins films typically. Going into this, I didn't really love any of his movies, so I was like, I just want to see if I'm missing something, because everyone talks about his movies like he's just one of the next big horror directors, which I just don't see it. Gretel and Hansel, though, was a movie that in 2020 I wanted to go see, just never did, and seeing it now, yeah, I like it. You got Sophia Lillis, who is Beverly in the It Chapter 1 and It Chapter 2 movies, and she's pretty good. The performances are pretty good all around, and so there's some good imagery within that movie. I'm going to roll through these three, and then I want to get your kind of overall mm-hmm. thoughts on them, or of the ones that you've seen. I did rewatch Long Legs from 2024, which is a movie I always said I liked, didn't love. I love the cast. Obviously, you got Nicolas Cage doing his wild shtick, which also feels kind of in line with Gladys in Weapons. So it was nice revisiting this movie, because I feel like a lot of people really liked it, and I was like, it's not that scary. It's not that good. On a rewatch, easily my favorite of his films. I'm a much bigger fan of this movie after rewatching it this week. It's the second time I've seen it. I remember in the first time I saw it in theaters, I'm like, this isn't scary. This all feels played out. This feels like stuff I've seen before, which some of those critiques still reign true, but it worked for me so much better on a rewatch, to where I'm like, I know where my expectations are. I know what to see, what I'm going to see. I know what this movie's going to give me. And it worked so much better on a rewatch. So Long Legs, I'm kind of a little obsessed with it, and I want more of like that horror thriller serial killer mystery movie that Long Legs kind of gives you. I didn't love the dolls and the inclusion of these demonic encapsulated dolls within the movie, at least the first time I watched it. Second time, smoothed it over a little bit. It worked a little bit better for me. So overall, Long Legs is far and away my favorite Osgood Perkins movie. The Monkey, 2025, came out this year. We talked about it. We saw it. It was also, I feel like it was in my top 10 anticipated of this past year. And I remember when I saw it in theaters, I was like, I like it. I see what it's going for. It's charming. It's fun enough. There's some decent humor. I love Theo James. DCU, if you're casting Batman, please make Theo James Batman. Watch The Monkey again this week. Fucking hated this movie. Boring as shit. Once you know the tricks of this movie and you know what's happening, which like I feel like you can say that about a lot of movies, like, oh, once you know what's gonna happen, it loses its luster. When you watch this movie, I'm like, there's nothing redeeming this. I can see what it's going for, but it's swinging and missing on everything. And great, we can applaud it swinging at big things and it trying to be like this almost like, it is a Stephen King adaptation, but you can feel the Stephen Kingness of it. That's the best part of it, but it's made by someone that like Stephen King, and I don't think understood Stephen King. So I'm just sitting here watching this man who's like, I think that we can put fun humor in this and like weird, spontaneous, wacky kills. And yeah, those are appealing at least the first time you see it. On a rewatch, tanked my viewing. So I'm like, I know the tricks that this movie has up its sleeve. It's not impressive anymore. It's not fun. And the humor fell horribly flat the entire time. Elijah Wood is in this movie for a brief little stint. In the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, that's so cool. He's such a great addition. Second time I'm watching him, I'm like, why the fuck are you here? You're not coming back, and you're the best part of this movie. What's going on? So, hated The Monkey. Gretel and Hansel, pretty good. I think it's a little underrated. It's a worthy watch, and it's a good, like, October. It's a good, like, fall movie to watch. Long Legs, I do think, is his best work. I'm still, while I don't love Osgood Perkins, his movies have always, at least his more recent ones, have had really good marketing campaigns that do a good job at getting me excited for him. So I'm going to see The Keeper when it comes out. I'm excited for it. I'm excited to see more Tatiana Maslany within that role, or within that movie. But yeah, he's kind of, he's very much like the definition of hit or miss for me. So what is your kind of overall kind of interaction with his works, and also what would you say is your interpretation of how he is as a director?
Yeah, I haven't seen Gretel and Hansel. I remember when it was coming out, kind of COVID-y type times, I feel like. I was interested in it, but I have seen Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters with Jeremy Renner and Gemma Arterton, which, what a fun movie.
Awesome.
Not
movie.
Good, but as a kid watching that on Redbox or something, yeah. I was like, man, this is good. This is sweet. So that's my only exposure to those characters. Long Legs, I've always really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. It doesn't 100% work for me. I think the marketing, like you mentioned, is incredible.
Better.
There's the trailer I still remember is like the heartbeat trailer for Micah Monroe when she first sees Nicolas Cage in costume, and they like put text up in the trailer like, this is the first time, and like we're tracking her heartbeat, and what you're hearing is it's like dun, 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 and like picking up as she sees him. And it's great, but I think Micah Monroe, to speak to her for a second, is great in that movie as
modern
the kind of
horror scream queen. Like, she's awesome.
And she's kind of the Silence of the Lambs, Jodie Foster detective type, which I love in that movie. The like opening, I don't remember if it's the opening scene, but like the first case that she's on and they go in a house is a great scene. And it really sets up this really bleak atmosphere.
Uh-huh.
And I really, you know, the doll stuff at the end, like, it's fine. Kind of like how I feel like Weapons. It's like, it works for this movie enough. Mm-hmm. I like the visual of the eyes of the dolls, like when you see
bleeding
that.
Bleeding through like the cloth over their
head. Yeah, I think that's really cool. So there's some memorable stuff for sure. I like that movie, and I am actually excited to rewatch it. Mm-hmm. But The Monkey is one that just has not sat really that well with me, much
watch
like
it,
you.
Watch it again.
I don't want to. I really
you
don't.
You won't like it more.
No, I, like, at the time I saw it, I was just like, I don't. Like, Theo James, you mentioned, is good. I still think he's solid, and I'm excited to see him in more stuff. But it just didn't leave an impact, didn't leave a mark with me at all. Like, the story, I just wasn't interested in. I didn't think the humor worked, like you mentioned as well. So, yeah, very, again, hit or miss of just being like, I think he could use another, like, I don't know, maybe like a co-director or something.
It's like Shyamalan. He needs someone to rein him in.
Yeah, just like, you have these ideas and these concepts that are so great, and then you're like, how do we end this? Or how do we fully realize it? I don't think it... He gets all the way there. So, interesting voice in the horror genre right now that I'm excited to see more of. I'm also excited for Keeper, but yeah, very interesting filmography that he has. But the last movie that I watched this week was one that Mason very kindly loaned me, the 4K of Death Becomes Her.
Yes.
And you watched it a few weeks ago and were raving about it. So I was like, you know what? I should check it out too. Comes from Robert Zemeckis. You got a great cast with Meryl Streep, Goldie Hawn, Bruce Willis, Isabella Rossellini. And a lot of attractive looking women in this movie, just as dudes with a couple sun cruisers in the system.
Yeah, it's crazy watching this movie with my wife and just being like, oh, wow, she's very pretty.
No, Goldie Hawn is,
whatever. Very pretty. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's, this movie's a lot of fun. I had a good time with this movie. It's very 90s. It's very spooky season. It's not a scary movie. It's not a horror movie at all. So if you haven't seen it, don't expect that.
It's very tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, it has a really fun time. And really, Meryl Streep is, you know, she's an actress that is kind of on the downswing. And she's trying to get this immortality treatment, this fun potion in this vial, and then you find out Goldie Hawn is also taking this potion. It just leads to a lot of fun sequences between them where neither of them can die, and they're just beating the shit out of each other with shovels or whatever they're doing.
Getting pushed downstairs.
Yeah, and it's great, and Bruce Willis is kind of reacting to all of it, where he's like, who's hotter at this time? I'm going to choose that person. Which I'm like, I mean...
Meryl Streep is a baddie in this fucking movie, though.
Not too bad.
Sold me. I was like, I've never been... I always have loved Meryl Streep as an actress, but I was like, wow, you are stunning in this movie. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun. In this movie, we talked about the visual effects, and it won the Oscar in 1993 for Best Visual Effects. I think for the most part, it holds up pretty well. There's a couple scenes, one specifically where Meryl Streep has her head on backwards, and she's walking, and it kind of is a little clunky, and you're now, like, eh, you didn't have it figured out, really. But one thing that I will point out is that, just reading up on this movie, a lot of the, like, animatronics and kind of prosthetic stuff that they use, they actually used in Jurassic Park, and they used for, like, some of the dinosaur models, just, like, the techniques of doing that, which was interesting. So, certainly...
Yeah, it was right before... Jurassic Park was 93, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so I think they kind of... A lot of the same team kind of worked, and then into the 90s and 2000s and stuff. So, very interesting just to see the, you know, the methods that they use for it, which was I respect and think it's well-deserved for that Oscar. Also wanted to point out a great use of mirrors in this movie. There is, it's, that's always a classic shot of, like, you see, you know, someone in the bathroom, or, like, you see the both versions in the reflection. But there's one scene where Meryl Streep is, like, laying in bed, and there's the mirror above her bed, and you see somebody come into the room, and, like, you don't realize it's a mirror shot at first, you just think it's that, but then it kind of starts to zoom out, and you realize it's the big mirror. I just really like that. I don't know, it's just, like, good filmmaking from Robert Zemeckis, who I think is pretty... I don't know. Like, I don't know if underrated is the right word, but I think
he's made classics.
He's made a lot of classics, and I think because recently he hasn't really put out a classic, people disregard him as, like, a really great director.
Welcome to Marwen?
But, right, you know, it's like Here and Welcome to Marwen, you're like, even The Walk, which is a movie, I'm like, it's fine. Yeah. But I think recently he's kind of lost it a little bit, but I mean, the Back to the Future trilogy, Castaway, Forrest Gump, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, like... He's done so many great things, and, like, in that, like, 80s, 90s stretch, he was just on fire, I feel like. And this is another one that I had a lot of fun with. I'm glad I've watched. Thank you for recommending it to me. I really, really enjoyed it.
What do you think is... What is your favorite Robert Zemeckis movie? I think I could guess it, but I want
to... What's your guess?
Back to the Future.
Yeah, that's in my top five movies of all time. So.
Okay, so that was a pretty easy one. What do you think is mine?
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Nope.
No? Okay. I'm trying to think if there's another Flight. No.
I was so excited for Flight. I was so excited for that movie. I'm like, oh, it's a great director. It's going to be such a good movie. It's got Denzel. The
I don't like that movie that much.
I do not like that movie at all. Yeah, I was like, there's a whole subplot with a porn star. I'm like, where was this in the marketing?
Yeah.
I just want this man who's an alcoholic who fucked up on a flight that inverted it. Saved a lot of lives but because he was fucking being an idiot. But... missed the ball on that one.
Yeah. Death Becomes Her.
Is my favorite.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
I grew up with, like, obviously Forrest Gump and Castaway. I didn't see Back to the Future when I was in college. And then when I saw it, I was like, yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. I get why it's a classic. It has never hit me as hard as it hit most people just because I think I saw it so late in life. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little envious of those people that got to grow up with it. But I think, Death Becomes Her is the one that just, like, immediately I'm like, yeah, this works.
It's fun.
I love it. It's so fun and charming.
Yeah, it's a great time. Definitely would recommend for this October season, like Mason said a couple weeks ago. Going forward for this upcoming week, we actually have a few different movies coming out. The first one is Eden, which is coming from Ron Howard. Obviously, Solo, A Star Wars Story. His probably best movie, right? Think so?
You want to do that one?
Yeah.
What do you want to go with?
Yeah, maybe Apollo 13. I watched.
Honestly,
that.
I'd put Rush.
Rush is great. Apollo 13. I watched earlier this year. Really like that one. So, also kind of an interesting, like, sort of like Zemeckis, where he's had some classics sprinkled throughout his career, but never is like in that best
he
director.
Doesn't have that acclaim around him.
Yeah, for sure. But this is a movie I'm excited for a couple of reasons. One is the
six
cast.
Reasons.
One.
Six reasons.
What is the cast of this movie? We got Sydney Sweeney, Vanessa Kirby, Ana de Armas. Now, I think I'm going to try and see this movie in theaters this week.
Shit, that's going to get us canceled. I think
it's just going to sound like a dog pound in the theater. If you got a group of the fellas going to the theater and you put that cast in front of us, along with Jude Law and Daniel Brühl, great actors, love them, but don't quite have that same
pull.
Yeah. I don't know how substantial of roles each of those three women have in the movie, but wow, that's a cast. Also, the story, I guess...
No, fuck it. It doesn't matter.
Some people live on an island. I don't know. They have to deal with the climate and stuff. So,
I haven't watched a single fucking trailer to this thing, because I'm like, when I heard who was making it, I'm like, oh, good. And then I heard the cast, I was like, oh, so this is event filmmaking that's happening right now. So I'm excited to see this. Probably not going to see it with my wife. I'm hoping I get it at a theater where I'm alone. This is the worst thing I think I've said on here. No, in actuality, okay, to try and redeem myself, I do love Jude Law and Daniel Brühl. I feel like I haven't seen Daniel Brühl in a lot of stuff recently. Ana de Armas is fantastic. Thank you for being one of the best parts of No Time to Die, which is one of my favorite James Bond movie. Vanessa Kirby has been great, especially with Fantastic Four earlier this year. And Sydney Sweeney, Madame Web sucked, but you were the best part of the worst piece of shit I've seen in a while. So, I think you might be able to act. Actually, okay, Anyone But You. Did you ever see Anyone But You with mm-hmm. Glenn Powell? I love that movie. It's so charming. Yeah, so I'm like, I love this cast. They're all awesome on the eyes. Like I said, 6 amazing reasons to go to the theater. I don't give a shit what the story is. Just give me beautiful people on an island. Fucking sold. And it's a good director behind the scenes, so who cares?
Yep.
moving into another movie that has a really good-looking cast, Honey Don't, coming from one of the Coen brothers, Ethan Coen, who did Drive Away Dolls, which I know is Corey's favorite Coen brothers movie.
It's okay. It's not actually that bad. It's fine.
I've heard it, like, whenever they do, like, their separate outings, I feel like I always hear, like, eh, it's okay. But when they're together, it's like, oh, gangbusters.
Yeah.
Did Joel or Ethan do Tragedy?
Joel Coen did that, which okay. I like that movie a lot, actually.
I still haven't seen that one. That's the one I'm like missing out on, yeah, I feel like. I like Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
But Ethan Coen directing this, we got Margaret Qualley, who is a smoke show and also a phenomenal actress, amazing in The Substance. You got Aubrey Plaza, Chris Evans, and Charlie Day, which Charlie Day, I feel like, is an unsung hero of modern film television. I love him in Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He is consistently one of the funniest characters in anything on that show.
Pacific Rim,
he's also fun.
Yeah.
I love him in Horrible Bosses 1 and 2. Those are good comedies that I feel like no one really talks about nowadays.
Him and Jennifer Aniston in that movie?
Oh, yeah. To be a married man getting sprayed in the crotch at your orthodontist or office, whatever, by Jennifer Aniston, who is desperately trying to hit on you and sleep with you. Side tangent. That movie is the reason why I had to invite friends over to get Jennifer Aniston nude off of my mother's computer at my house. I saw that movie and I was like, it opened up. The sky has opened up. The clouds are gone. The sun is right there. And the sun is in the shape of Jennifer Aniston and an orthodontist coat and nothing else.
Yep.
Wow. So I'm a horrible person. But yeah, I'm not really... Back to this movie. It's a dark comedy about Honey O'Donohue, a small-town private investigator who delves into a series of strange deaths tied to a mysterious church. Church is led by Chris Evans. The trailers haven't, like, really worked for me. I'm intrigued enough because it's a Coen Brothers, or a Coen Brother film, and it has a good cast. But I haven't heard great things, and I'm just not, like, this feels like a very late August movie to release. It doesn't feel like gangbusters. It feels like something I could go see if I wanted to, but it's not event films, which is fine. Corey, do you have any more anticipation for Honey Don't?
I'm actually kind of excited. I'm down with the story, and like I said, Driveway Dolls is like fine enough. I hope this improves on it a little bit. I think there was ideas in that movie that were pretty cool, and the cast was good too. Margaret Qualley was in that one as well, so I'm kind of like excited. I think it could be maybe like a sleeper a little bit. Maybe like won't get the big attention or big acclaim. It's not going to be a top 10 movie this summer, obviously, but I'm excited to see it. One that is coming out this week that I really didn't know about until I was making these notes was a new movie from David Mackenzie, which he made Hell or High Water, which I love that movie. I think it's one of the best modern westerns.
Mm-hmm.
And this one has a good cast of Riz Ahmed, Lily James, Sam Worthington, and then Willa Fitzgerald, who was great in Strange Darling, and I'm happy to see her getting in more stuff. I think she's going to be a huge rising star in the next few years, just after seeing that movie. But
you got a lot of throat noises happening right now.
Do I? I don't know.
I keep hearing you like gulp air.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Talk. I think they're maybe. Yeah, it's bubbling a little bit or something.
This episode's gonna be called Throat Noises.
Yeah.
Smack your lips. No.
That's for the audio listeners. For the visual people, they just saw me. You know,
they saw his teeth.
Yeah, that's right. I'll try and keep the throat noises to a minimum here. I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to keep that down. We're going to try
I had Chipotle at lunch today, and I ate it. This is a tangent. Yeah. I got a bowl, and I ate it in, like, maybe 5 minutes.
Chicken or what?
I do sofritas. Because their chicken makes me shit. So I got sofritas.
Okay.
And their sofritas is great. It's why I go there over Canova.
I had a Culver's Double Deluxe with fries and a root beer like an hour and a half ago.
You are going to be an upside down volcano. You are insane.
No, Culver's is sweet, man. They don't have the Kurter Burger back yet. I think that's in the fall.
That's going to put someone in the
hospital. That's like the patty. Yeah, I know, just the all cheese curd. Yeah, yeah, it's great. It's really, really good. I enjoy that quite a bit.
That in a concrete mixer? Oh, my God.
Dude, they had at the menu today, I didn't even know this happened. I'm usually on top of the new food stuff. They had Cinnamon Toast Crunch, Lucky Charms, and some other cereal in concrete mixer. That's CT Crunch. I'm gonna have to.
Yeah, what's go for that. Do you have a go-to concrete mixer?
I feel like it's kind of like boring, but Oreo, just like an Oreo concrete mixer, is just like it's solid. So I don't know. Maybe I'll do a review of this CT Crunch concrete mixer next week.
We'll make it a whole event.
I'm excited. So pumped. What are we talking about? Relay? Oh yeah, Relay. What's the
I've heard
did
one.
Did I go through the plot? Oh, no, I didn't go through the
plot. I think you said the cast. You said
Relay. Oh, yeah. Let's see. What is it now? A broker of lucrative payoffs between corrupt corporations and the individuals who threaten them breaks his own rules when a new client seeks his protection to stay alive. That doesn't really give me much. I don't know what that really means. But the cast and the director, I feel like I haven't seen David McKenzie do anything that I've loved since Hell or High Water. So
I still haven't seen Outlaw King.
I haven't either, but that was a Netflix Chris Pine kind of knights, knights and stuff. So
medieval.
I don't know. This one could be good, and again another kind of lesser release than some other bigger movies, but it could be okay.
Yeah, we got a good kind of conglomerate, just wild collection of movies. Yeah. They're a little bit smaller this week that are coming out, so you can kind of. Honestly, go to the theater, throw a rock at a wall, and you'll find a movie that you want to go see or could go see. Splitsville is also coming out, which I've never heard about until right now. Mm. It's in limited release, but will be expanding in early September. It's directed by Michelangelo Covino, who is the director of The Climb, which was a thriller from, 2 years ago?
I think so.
About, but this is starring Dakota Johnson, Adria Ojorna, who is my current frontrunner for who I want to play Wonder Woman. You got Kyle Marvin, and Michelangelo Covino in the film. Synopsis, because no one has heard of this movie, is when Ashley asks for a divorce, the good-natured Carrie runs to his friends, Julie and Paul, for support. Their secret to happiness is an open marriage, hell yeah, that is until Carrie crosses the line and throws all the relationship into chaos. So, I know nothing about it. Have you seen a trailer for this?
The reason I put this on is because I've seen this trailer so much.
Oh, I don't think I've heard of this at all.
This comes on at, almost every, movie that I see, and it looks kind of fun, I don't know.
Dakota Johnson needs to prove that she can act to me after Materialists.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see, but it's limited release this weekend and expands in early September, so probably then when we'd be able to see it. So I don't know. It looks fine. I don't know that I'm super excited for it.
The main thing that I'm most excited for this upcoming week, again, something that's surprisingly not coming to theaters, it is a television show coming to HBO Max it's HBO Max now, thankfully. Peacemaker Season 2 is dropping. We'll get the first episode on Thursday, August 21st. So for us, that's in 3 days. Can't wait for that. It's obviously a show created by James Gunn, written and partly directed by Gunn. We're getting John Cena, Daniel Brooks, who I loved in the first season, Freddie Stroma, Jennifer Holland, and Steve Agee, who is maybe the sleeper hit of the DCU. He is one of the best characters. I never remember how to pronounce his fucking name, so I'm not going to try it here. But Peacemaker... this is what I've been able to Google and try and find, because they've been kind of under wraps aside from the trailers that we've gotten about what the main crux of the story is for season 2. But Peacemaker discovers an alternate world where life is everything he wishes it could be, but this discovery also forces him to face his traumatic past and take the future in his own hands. You see some of that kind of universe swapping, universe jumping in the trailers, so I'm very excited for season 2. I'm so tired of multiversal stories within the MCU, within DC, which DC hasn't really touched on that, but I just don't need those. I'm excited for hopefully they can open this book and then immediately shut it at the end of season 2. I don't need to have this exist within the DCU. But I loved the first season. I did watch it a little bit ago. Finally did a full watch through. Loved that show. So I can't wait for this. This is going to be the event thing for me to watch this upcoming week as well.
Yeah, I love that first season. I'm going to rewatch it this week because I haven't seen it since 2021 or 22, I think it was. Again, I think I mentioned before, but it was coming out at the same time as Book of Boba Fett. And I remember being more excited for Boba Fett, and then I was each week I was just like, "Oh, Peacemaker's so much better."
Book of Boba Fett's ass, actually.
Yeah. So I've heard just from like reviews of people that have seen it that it is very heartfelt and like still focuses on characters. So that gives me hope that the multiverse stuff is just like some fun,
just the background.
And for like, I think multiverse stuff can work a little bit better in a show. Maybe then
you have
movie.
More time to spend on it. Yeah.
When like a movie, it's kind of like, all right, this is the thing of this movie. Where like I don't hate it and everything, but this show, I feel like it could have fun with it and have a good time. So I'm really excited for it. Like I said, I plan on rewatching that first season this week and get prepared for this one.
Yeah, yeah. Moving into the physical media roundup, I talked about Long Legs. Corey lent me his 4K Blu-ray, and by watching it and now having more of a love and appreciation for that movie, I now went out and bought my own 4K Blu-ray, so I'm excited for that to be delivered.
Did you do the Steelbook or this version?
I did that version. Okay. I think I did that version. I had to look because it just labeled it as a 4K, and I'm like, does this come with a Blu-ray? Because I don't have a 4K player. I like the typical, like the slip covers and the Steelbooks that are 4K specific look way better than the Blu-ray releases. And that, like, even the Superman releases that we just got finally, like, announced and are going to stores, and it's like, oh, the 4K looks better than the Blu-ray, but the Steelbook looks the best, I guess. So it's like, fuck. Yeah. But I got the 4K. Hopefully it comes with the Blu-ray. I hope it comes with the slip. I don't know. That's another thing, of the dangers of ordering online. It's like, I don't get to be in control of the one I take home with me. It's just, I ordered this, and they're going to give me the one that they give me.
Yeah, the Steelbook that they did a new release of is really cool. It has, like, cool, like, symbols on there, like a slip cover. So, looks great. This week coming out on the 19th, is Bring Her Back, the A24 exclusive they're going to have. I think if I was looking right, just the Blu-ray comes out this week, and then the 4K is next week.
Sure.
I don't know if that was a mistake or if that's actually how it's happening, but I enjoy that movie. I'll definitely be buying that at some point. Maybe if there's like an A24 sale.
Be great.
I'd buy, I need to buy The Brutalist and like Warfare. Zone of Interest. Like, just a lot of movies that I really want to get. Also, this week is The Boys Season 4. I know Season 5 is coming out. Is it later this year or next year or something?
I tried with the first season. I got two episodes in and I was just like, meh.
I haven't seen it, but
I love it.
I think I would like it, but I haven't got into it at all. Happy Gilmore 4K, which I know you ordered.
I ordered, and that comes tomorrow, and I'm excited about
it. Nice. Dragman Hell 4K, Coneheads, Harvey, Xanadu, and Sensibility on 4K. So, a lot of different options this week. Going into the movie news, starting off with a little bit of sad news. Just yesterday, Terrence Stamp passed away, who we actually just talked about a few weeks ago, and our Superman kind of watch through was General Zod in those first two movies, and he was in so many other things as well, but I think kind of just for us, you know, those Superman movies were some of the first times we saw him, and then also as Chancellor Valorum in The Phantom Menace.
Obviously.
And he was great, and we were kind of discussing it before. He's like, he was actually like not a bad like character in that movie. Like, he was like a pretty good chancellor. It was controlled.
Yeah, he got kind of done dirty in that movie.
Yeah, like obviously Palpatine, you know, Sith Lord. Yeah. You know, he's doing some stuff behind the scenes with Amidala, whatever. But I was like, well, you kind of got fucked over in that movie. You got voted out. But he was great. He was a standout in that movie, and just somebody that I always like clearly remember from Phantom Menace of just being like, oh, that's Chancellor Valorum, like. He doesn't have a huge role, but just somebody you remember for sure. Yeah. He was in a lot of other things as well. Last Night in Soho and The Haunted Mansion are two, you know, somewhat more recent movies. Yeah. So
the ones that I kind of, like, have synonymous with Terrence Stamp, aside from, obviously, General Zod, or I know he was... I haven't seen this movie. I think it was a Soderbergh movie, The Limey. I know that was a big role for him, and that a lot of people recognize him for that. He has such a, like... specific look to him, to where you see him and you're like, you remember him. Like, he is someone that you just see pop up and everything. It's like, oh, it's that guy. You might not know his name, but he's always there. He also brings this like intensity to him, which The Haunted Mansion is a movie that I grew up watching endlessly. It's not even that good of a movie. You got Eddie Murphy and Terrence Stamp, and it could have been better. It's not. It's a decent enough family time or a family movie night movie, but I always have held that movie close to my heart just of how many times I've watched it with my family, but also Terrence Stamp is so good in it. And it's another great thing of using your strength of, he is a stoic, serious, almost intense and scary character in a lot of the things I've seen him in. And how you play that for a laugh in Haunted Mansion, or how you kind of make him more friendly or more family friendly at least. So I've always loved him in that. And then Last Night in Soho, that was my second date with my wife. We went and saw that movie. And he has a smallish role in that movie, but I remember when he popped up, I was like, no fucking way, Terrence Stamp is in this movie? That was so sweet. It was a good surprise. So it's kind of sad to see. I feel like every other week we're talking about a famed old celebrity passing away that's kind of been within, like, a big point within our childhood, even if it's a Terrence Stamp who is a great leading man, but also I feel like he just popped up in everything. He was just everywhere. You look in a movie and there he is. Like, boom, he's there. And it's kind of sad, but I don't know the exact cause of death. I believe it was just complications just brought on by old age. So 87, you're getting to, again, a point where it's a celebration. So it's a time to be like, oh, hey, what's my favorite Terrence Stamp movie? Time to watch that this week. But it's a great actor that we lose. And he'll be missed and hopefully remembered for a long time with his acting legacy. Moving into other news, some of the more exciting news that I think dropped last week was Warner Brothers and their just prolific run of 2025. They have made box office history, which is something that just felt so novel in this story, just because it was like, really? Like, in 2025, we're having new box office like benchmarks and it wasn't a movie making like $3 billion? Like, it's just... just a lot of, well, three of the six movies that they put out that were more original leaning, but they became the first studio with six consecutive films, starting with Sinners, Minecraft, F1 the movie, Final Destination, Bloodline, Superman, and Weapons. All six of those movies opening above $40 million domestic and being original stories. So it's a awesome kind of stat. It's something that when it came out, I was like, that's not like the biggest story, but that's like of all, like, ever. This has never happened. That's crazy. And it's a time when Warner Brothers was looking at Pam DeLuca and DeLuca and Abdi, they're leaders of the studio, and like, maybe they should be getting fired, and boom, six hits. It's like, all right, they're probably safe. They have some good job security going for them. So this is just kind of a cool little note to kind of celebrate.
Yeah, absolutely. Great to see just success at the box office. Always want to support that, and especially with movies like Sinners and Weapons too, just like holding well, and you know, Weapons had a good second weekend, which is great to see. So
that and all these movies were like massive wins for me this year. Like the creative ones or the original ones were surprises. Final Destination Bloodlines, I've returned to a franchise I didn't need, that was a massive surprise. It's like, these were all like really good movies too. Yeah. It's weird how if you make a good movie, it makes good money. Huh.
Yeah.
Never would have guessed.
Right. So great to see that. Hopefully other studios take note. Speaking of other studios, recently we had the Skydance and Paramount merger, which I don't remember if we discussed or not, but happened like a couple weeks ago. The CEO, David Ellison, has talked about kind of highlighting their main franchises, which he kind of classified as Star Trek, Top Gun, Transformers, A Quiet Place, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, kind of more specifically like Mutant Mayhem from a couple years back.
Thank fucking
we
God.
Love that. And he kind of wanted those to be the key franchises. And a part of me is like, yeah, like, do a Mutant Mayhem sequel. I think that could be fun. But I'm like, do we need more Top Gun? Do we need more Transformers? I don't know. I don't, like, do we need more Star Trek? We've had a lot of Star Trek. It's kind of a mixed bag where it's like, we just talked about how original movies are doing so great. And I hope that he, obviously we don't know about original movies like we do with franchises. Yeah. It just kind of comes in the months leading up to it. So it's tough to be like, well, he's only focusing on that. I hope that they kind of make a new Top Gun that is a great hit.
Yeah.
Or a new Star Trek that's a great hit, or a new Quiet Place, something fresh and new alongside some of these franchise movies. That you kind of need that good balance, especially nowadays with streaming and everything. You kind of need to have some of those franchise movies. But I'm excited to see new leadership, and whether it works out or not, it'll be interesting to see where they go with some of these franchises.
Yeah, the thing that like had me the most excited was like, finally we're recognizing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem, because that's one of my favorite animated movies and my favorite Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. So I was just like, finally, I'd be happy to have another Star Trek. Star Trek, A Quiet Place, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are the ones that I'm like, yes, I need more of. Transformers, leave it in the dust. Michael Bay fucked that into the fucking ground. Don't touch it anymore. We had Transformers 1 and no one saw it, and that was maybe the best Transformers movie. So it's like, clearly the audience isn't there anymore. Top Gun, I don't need a third one, but granted, Maverick was awesome, so I'm not surprised by that. But some good news to see one of like the leaders in the industry being like, we need to get back not necessarily back to basics, but we need to reestablish why Paramount is so monumental in film history. And that excites me. In other news, we got the kind of fast-tracking of Superman's Return. I feel like every other article I've seen is about James Gunn talking about the Superman saga or the Super Family and all that shit. But James Gunn has confirmed that a new Superman film starring David Cornsweet has been moving a little bit sooner, moving forward sooner rather than expected with the success of Superman. And he has completed a 60-page treatment of that script and will begin to then write the script. But the film isn't, or is rumored to not necessarily be a direct follow-up or a direct sequel to Superman, but it is something that will continue the story and also incorporate Clark Kent, David Cornsweet, Superman into that story. So it's like they got their big pinnacle announcement introduction to this new universe in the form of a film, and now they're ready to roll with it based on its success. So I'm excited about that, and with how much I've loved Superman this past summer, I'm excited that they're kind of, all right, time to put the pedal to the metal, let's get going on this universe.
Yeah, well, I hope that they focus in it a bit and just do yeah. Like one villain, Superman, Lois, yeah. Some of those core characters.
I'm so excited for Supergirl, and I have no idea how that's going to play into like the multitude of the characters that are incorporated, mm-hmm. but I'm just like, I'm already so excited for the next Super Family or Superman saga-esque story within this universe, so I can't wait.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see. One delay that we had was Shrek 5. Everybody's
waiting
for this.
Everyone just fucking got pissed.
It was supposed to come out in December 2026, delayed to June 2027. We got that teaser trailer, and everybody saw that and was like, I don't know, can we Sonic bully them?
Yeah.
Because this animation doesn't look good. And I hope that's what this is.
Yeah.
I hope that they saw the reaction to that and were like, maybe we should just go back to how it looked in like 2000 or whatever.
Yeah.
Because that animation still holds up in the like first few Shrek movies. It looks great.
Yeah.
And we don't need to like do this new weird digital thing with Shrek.
Yeah, the animation doesn't look like bad. It's just they restyled things. I'm like, you tried to modernize it too much. Just go back to that ugly-ass ogre from the first one. Keep the same character designs. I feel like you're trying to adapt it too much. Animation looks good. I'm just like, this feels different. It feels too clean. Yeah.
I like a grimy, dirty
give
ogre.
Give me a guy eating onions and taking a fucking mud bath because that's what he thinks makes him clean.
Taking the earwax into his martini or whatever he did the one time. Like, that's crazy.
Ogre sex within the Shrek world must be fucking wild and disgusting. Just, like, imagine, that's them bathing is mud, earwax in the fucking martini. Like, them bumping uglies is gotta be just petrifying. Like, just absolutely a lot of crustiness. Like, just disgust. Okay. That's gotta be so fucking bad.
You've always said that Ogre Fiona is your, like, over human Fiona we see in Shrek 2.
It's or my
Shrek
hall pass,
1.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you said Ogre Fiona is always your one, like, animated character over, like, Mrs. Incredible and anything.
Yeah.
I think you've said that.
Fucking, what's the green bitch from Kim Possible?
Oh, yeah.
Shego?
Yeah. I think you've said Ogre Fiona over her, too, so.
Sure.
Yeah. No, yeah. Yeah, Mason, big
I'm
ogre
not even
guy.
Fight. I'm not even gonna fight.
Big ogre guy. Big ogre guy. We had a couple trailers this week. One was Peacemaker 2. They had a Red Band trailer just showing a little bit more violence, swearing, all that kind of stuff. The one that I was most excited for was Marty Supreme, which is coming out this fall, and it's kind of an awards season movie, possibly. Josh Safdie is directing it, of the Safdie brothers, kind of another Coen Brothers thing splitting up and doing their own thing. Benny Safdie has Smashing Machine coming out. Josh Safdie has Marty Supreme. Maybe they'll both be in the awards conversation. That could be kind of fun.
Two Safdie brothers nominated for Best Actor would be pretty sweet.
That'd be kind of cool. And I'm excited for this movie. I mean, Timothée Chalamet is great. I'm not sick of him. I know some people have had the Pedro Pascal thing where they're like, I'm sick of seeing Timmy in all these movies. I think he's been great and very different in every movie that he's been in, so I'm excited for that. I think it's a cool concept of just this, like, ping pong dude.
Yeah.
Like, cool. Fuck it. Fine. Let's do that. I'm excited. I think it can be a really fun Oscar contender that's not, like, a heavy drama.
Which one are you more... I didn't watch this trailer, but I'm excited just based on the team around it, and I know the story. So I didn't want to watch the trailer. I will see it. Of Smashing Machine and Marty Supreme, which of the two are you more excited for?
I think Marty Supreme. I think Smashing Machine, I am excited for sure, just to see The Rock and his performance.
Yeah.
I think I know how the story will go. Kind of like a music biopic at a certain, like a sports
has
biopic.
Its beats. Yeah.
Yeah, like you know where it's going. It's more of just the individual performances and like I'm sure the makeup will get nominated. Like those individual things, but Marty Supreme, I'm like, I don't know like where this is going exactly, so I'm kind of more excited for that.
Alright. I think I'm really just the most excited to see Dwayne Johnson give a performance that isn't Dwayne Johnson oiled up wearing a tight shirt and smoldering, so I'm pretty stoked for that. Yeah. So I'd probably give the slight edge to Smashing Machine. But it'd be really cool to see both Safdie brothers potentially in the conversation for Best Director. Not together, though. Them going head-to-head would be pretty sweet. We talk about AMC a lot. One, I'm a AMC Stubbs member, Stubbs Plus, whatever their top fucking... You pay a subscription, you get 4 movies a week. I do that. And that's why I go to that theater. I don't love AMC theaters, but that's just the best bang for my buck in terms of watching movies. AMC has now reported that they will be cutting down on ads, which they mentioned that they were going to be adding ads, and then much to a lot of the major studios' chagrin, they're like, don't fucking do that. People are already getting pissed. They don't remember all the trailers they're watching. They're like, all right, we'll cut down on the ads. But it looks like it might be the wrong ads, where AMC, instead of taking out a lot of trailers, I feel like I'm pretty sure looking back at the story they were talking about, well, the standard theater or the average for a lot of these other big theater companies within the States is they'll show 5 trailers. We show 6. So we'll just cut 1 trailer and we'll match the average. 5 trailers is still a lot for me. So they're like, well, yeah, we'll gain a couple minutes from cutting out a trailer. But also, we're going to look at cutting out the AMC in-house content. Not necessarily the one that you'd want to see fucking leave or just updated. No, we're going to likely see more of Nicole Kidman talking about this is heartbreak feeling great in a place like this. They're talking about losing and removing the reminders to silence your phones and avoid talking in theaters. The two ads that I think, yes, it's like beating a dead horse when you see it in theaters, but like some people need that reminder because the amount of boomers and people over the age of 30 that are like quick to rush to their phone to like, oh yeah, airplane mode or oh yeah, silence, that you see in theaters, it's like, okay, so some people do still need this because they forgot that they're not at home. Great. All right. Happy that that's there. Nope. They're looking to cut that down, which is maybe the best ad, the most important ad that they keep. Adam Aaron, you're a fucking idiot. Like, what are you doing? Like, you're such a stupid bitch. And, like, they're just sucking themselves off with being like, when you buy a ticket, hey, we'll put a little disclaimer at the bottom. 25 to 30 minutes of ads will play before the theater. Wow, you're such a hero for giving me that rundown of a full fucking half hour that abuses my time before I can see this movie. Beautiful. Thank you, Adam Aaron. You're awesome. I love you. Oh, you're going to cut down on ads? That sounds great. The wrong ads? You're a fucking idiot. How are you running this company? A fucking meme stock saved your company during COVID, and now you're just like, I'm God's gift to theaters. No, you're a fucking idiot. So, if you couldn't tell, I'm heated. I think he's an absolute asshat. Not that I think I could run a company better than him. I'm a 25-year-old man that watches movies for fun and doesn't have really any interests outside of that. But holy fuck, it's not rocket science. Cut down on the fucking trailers. People pass three trailers, I'm not remembering shit before the movie. Like, I'm not gonna think about anything. I don't need to see that Coke ad where that couple is going, they're getting Coke and then they're driving race cars and then they're eating popcorn together. I don't need to see that couple, even though they're very attractive, great for them. Love this long-ass 4-minute Coke ad that I see every fucking time. I don't need to see Nicole Kidman's freaky face anymore either. So maybe cut down on the superfluous bullshit that you're just getting money from other companies for, and maybe focus on the viewer's experience and making sure that people are, one, shutting the fuck up and watching a movie because they're not at home, and two, don't talk. Don't talk. Silence your phones. When you're at a movie, you watch the fucking movie. It's crazy if you paid money and other people paid money to watch this fucking thing on the screen that you should just be there to enjoy it and not, holy shit, Snapchat's going off. Oh, wow. Hey, I brought my 3-year-old kid to see Weapons. I wonder if this is going to be a fucking problem. AMC, you are so misled. Corey, any thoughts on AMC cutting down?
You got a Mason rent. I like it.
It's mostly all around AMC every week, I feel like.
I've never really loved AMC so much.
Their popcorn is getting better.
Okay.
Well, I only get popcorn when I go, or cookie dough bites, if you know. But their popcorn has improved.
Okay.
That's it.
That's good. That's positive.
One positive.
That's a good thing.
Fuckers.
Good job, guys. Yeah, I go to Imagine Theaters and they have like four trailers and like two ads maybe.
That and they do a good job of introducing.
Yeah.
Hey, this is how much time this is going
to
be.
Yeah, so they I think they do a good job. Yeah, just keep cutting back. Just keep do it. Take lessons from this and keep cutting back on stuff. One other kind of surprising bit of news we got this week was that there's supposedly a Rambo prequel movie coming out with Noah Centineo. He was in some of those fucking Netflix rom-com movies. I don't know which ones they were. I think that's kind of where he got big. I haven't seen any of them, but he was also in Black Adam.
Yes, Adam Smasher.
Adam Smasher. He was cool in there, so that's where we know him from. And he's going to be John Rambo in a prequel movie. And director of Sisu, Jalmari Hollander, which I actually quite enjoy that movie.
That's also a perfect guy.
Yeah.
To direct a prequel to Rambo.
Yeah, or that's First Blood. I like that. So I'm excited for that. Just kind of the talent behind the screen there. I think it's cool. I don't know that we need a Rambo prequel. You could just do like an action movie with Noah Centineo and like have him be kind of a rugged war veteran and don't need to tie it into this. Because I think, you know, we have First Blood, which is a great movie and not even like not even a great action movie, just a great movie.
Yeah.
And then you have the fun like Rambo 2 and 3, which I grew up watching all the time. I love Rambo 4. Rambo. Is there's some sweet scenes in that movie. I don't love it as a whole. Oh yeah, the fucking
bitches in half.
It's insane. I fucking love that. Rambo Last Blood, not very good, but there's some fun at the end of the movie. I don't know. I'm kind of mixed on it. Again, it's just like more franchise stuff when we could, like we said earlier, like do some original stuff. Like have fun doing that. So I don't really need this, but I'm curious about it.
I don't need it either. It's not a franchise that I have like a lot of like, oh, you can't touch it. Like this is so sacred. The First Blood is an amazing movie. Not like you said, not like not just an action movie. It's a great drama. And I wish the alternate ending for that movie was the real ending where Rambo kills himself. Dark, but also fits. The other films that where they just more action oriented, they're fun, but they're not they're nowhere near as good in, or high up in quality as First Blood. I don't need a prequel, but I'll go see it. I like from what I've seen of Noah Centineo, I like him enough. Works for me. I'm more just like really thrown by who they got to direct this. I'm like Sisu is such a wild ride. I love that movie. Mm-hmm. So that's perfect. Perfect choice there with Jalmari Hollander. I believe I said. Correctly, hopefully, I don't know. But I think that that movie could be something potentially really fun. So if it's like Sisu, then I'll have a good time. One kind of sneaky announcement that I didn't know of until earlier this morning, but supposedly with Lord of the Rings, The Hunt for Gollum, the new Lord of the Rings movie coming from director Andy Serkis, there's not like the most amount of kind of publicity, I feel like, around this movie or what this is going to be about. We know Gollum's coming, and Gollum is also directing the fucking movie. That's cool.
Gollum's coming, and Gollum's directing the movie.
Gollum is doing a porno.
Get that loincloth ready, boys.
If he could just flash it in this movie, I just want to see when he's back.
Pause.
No. Ian McKellen, the great Ian McKellen, who obviously plays Gandalf, has teased at he was at some sort of festival or kind of, I was going to say press conference. Ian McKellen ain't holding no press conferences, but he was on stage and he mentioned that he doesn't know much about the movie, but he does know that Gandalf and Frodo will appear in this new Lord of the Rings film directed by Andy Serkis. Filming will begin in May, but he also didn't 100% confirm that he and Elijah Wood would be returning in those roles, but we know that hopefully these characters will be back on screen, so that's kind of exciting. I don't see how you make a Lord of the Rings movie with those characters where you don't go back to those actors just because they are so synonymous with those characters. So I'm thrilled. If they're not there, I'm still excited, but I like the idea of those actors coming back excites me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with Lord of the Rings being my favorite trilogy of all time, I'm always curious to go back. It hasn't really worked. All the
boom. Okay, I don't even know what my pick is, so I'm just being an ass.
What are you going to say, the Trolls trilogy or something?
No.
Is there three of those things?
There's probably like six of those.
Probably. Fuck, yeah. Ugly Dolls?
Are you talking about like the animated ones or like the, like the horror ones?
Yeah, the animated ones.
Oh, there's like three or four. I don't know. I feel like we had like the streaming year of like 2020 where like we got a Hotel Transformania.
Oh, yeah.
And shit. Like, we're like, no, I guess there's a fourth one of these. So,
anyways.
How did
we get there? I don't know. But I agree. Like, I feel like they'll probably like cameo in this movie. I wouldn't assume that they're like huge roles, really. But I'm actually like sort of excited with Andy Serkis being the director. Like, he obviously loves the character and is passionate about it, so that gives me more excitement. But yeah, well, I'm sure we'll get more casting updates, and maybe Martin Freeman will be in it. Maybe we'll see Bilbo again. Who knows what this movie holds?
I like Martin Freeman.
Yeah.
Anyways, thanks for sitting down with us, talking movies, hopefully drinking a little bit. It is late on a Monday. We are recording this a little bit of a day late, but thanks for sitting with us. Follow us for more in-depth movie reviews and news, whether it's on Instagram or TikTok. Leave us a like or a comment if it's a suggestion of things that we can improve on. We might actually start listening to you just because we have like 6 followers, so it'd be nice to know a little bit more about what we can improve on. Other than that, I need to pee. You probably need to pee. Yep. So thanks for sitting with us.
Yeah. For Mason and I, it's late night. That's a wrap.